You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings. But don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Veneri.
And I'm John Deck, and each week we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And this week...
Oh, this week? Wait for it. Few who deny at what I do I am the best, for my talents are renowned far and wide. When it comes to surprises in the moonlit night, I excel without ever even trying. With the slightest little effort of my ghost-like charms, I have seen grown men give out a shriek. With a wave of my hand and a well-placed bone, I have swept the very bravest off their feet. Yet, year after year, it's the same old tune, and I grow so weary of the sound of screams. And I, Jack, the Pumpkin King, have grown so tired of the same old thing. That's right.
We're watching The Nightmare Before Christmas from 1993, directed by Henry Selick. Wow, John, I don't think that we've ever had a minute-long sound clip before, and certainly not of one of us singing an entire stanza from the movie.
I'm a little bit of a fan of this movie.
Yeah, what? And I would never have guessed.
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is breaking one of our rules. With that whole, like, not having watched a movie in a while thing that we talk about. But, you know, I think there may have been a little false start or two as we got into Spookytober. I'm really glad and excited and happy for us to finally get around. We've talked about this for a couple of years, and I think it's always been like, should we do it for Halloween? Should we do it around Christmas? Should we do it in the middle? And it just never quite got there. But now we're doing it. By gum, and I'm very excited, and I happen to love the music of this movie so much. I love the stop motion animation. There's so much about it, and I'm just, I know I've seen it within a year or so, so I'm not expecting any big revelations, or maybe I don't like it anymore. So you're gonna end up with me being relentlessly cheery and excited, and I hope you can handle it.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be so cheery and excited. It's been a while since I've seen it. Maybe it's going to fall flat on its face for me. I doubt it, because I do remember being very, very taken with this movie. I thought it was just a wonderful piece of film. So I am excited to jump in and watch it. It's probably been 4 or 5 years since I've seen this. So it's not necessarily fresh in my mind, and when you suggested it, you started saying Nightmare, and I was like, oh, before on Elm Street, thinking, oh, Spooky-tober, and you're like, no, Before Christmas. And you and I have danced around this movie a lot. Like, we've almost done it at least 3 times, and something else comes up, or we decide it's not appropriate for the time frame or whatever. So I'm excited to be doing it, because I do remember really enjoying this movie and having very little to complain about. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't care, you know, because, listen, we've had to deal with, you know, the Bill Randalls of this world who are like, blah, 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 Die Hard's Christmas movie. So you know what? We're going to watch Nightmare Before Christmas. And we're going to do it, and it's going to be a Halloween movie. It's going to be during Spooky-tober. It's going to be horror. Even if you think, oh, this movie's not a horror movie, screw you. I don't care. If that's what your thoughts are, go stand in the corner, because it's time for us to finally grasp this deliciousness and just slurp it down like brains off of a plate.
Oh my God, Uncle John's bringing the heat. Okay, we're going to go do this. We're going to go watch this movie. It is streaming on Disney Plus, so get it there. And when we come back, we are talking The Nightmare Before Christmas. John, are you ready?
I mean, do you need me to sing us out?
If you so choose.
It sounds like you're not sold for on that.
Do you want me to
sing us out?
I absolutely do.
Oh, somewhere deep inside of these bones, an emptiness began to grow. Let's go watch this movie.
We'll be right back.
As he did.
Haven't you heard of peace on earth? And goodwill toward men?
Now!
Welcome back, everyone. John.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you take us away here? I know this is a perennial favorite of yours.
It is indeed, and it remains so. But I think...
I figured that would be the case after watching this. I was like, man, this is right up John's alley.
Yeah, but... Like, rather than just talk about did I like it, my reactions, I just want to talk about an appreciation for this art form in general, meaning stop motion animation.
And I was hoping that we would go there because there is a lot to praise in that regard.
Yeah, so like, I don't want to talk about lists of favorite things or who's doing what and stuff like that, at least not at this moment. All I want to say is that the type of passion it takes to be this exacting and this particular is just so gratifying to me that it's almost like the movie doesn't have to be that great for me to really appreciate it. Fortunately, I think the movie is pretty great and I enjoy it on several levels. So yeah, instead of talking about like favorite stop motion animation movies or like who's doing what out there, I just want to talk about in general the appreciation I have for the passion and the amount of just sheer sweat and blood and time that's poured into the meticulousness of this kind of art form. And I just for fun after watching this went back and rewatched something I've seen a while ago, which was just a making of featurette, which is like, I don't know, like a 25-minute mini documentary talking about the entire process. And again, it's just like to see, like, there's all the prep work and all the planning, all the storyboarding and all the set building and all the stuff. Like, that's all, I mean, a big deal. Everyone does that. But when you get to the filming, they filmed the movie at 24 frames per second. So obviously, 24 different photographs for every second of film right. That goes by, and so 1 minute of footage takes about 7 to 10 days to complete,
which is insane. I mean, when you think about it, like 24 frames per second, just to put that into perspective for everybody so you don't have to do the calculation, this is an 87 minute long movie. Even let's just say that all 87 minutes are stop motion animation. Obviously you have credits that aren't, but 125,000 individually shot frames.
Yeah.
It's so, like, actually they take a shot, move the thing just a tiny bit, and then they take another shot and they do that over and over again. It's insanity.
Yeah, your math was fairly close when you take out the credits, because it's about 110,000 actual shots.
Fuck.
And not only that, but if you're doing a scene, like a 3 to 4 minute scene where everything, they've pre-programmed the camera movements on tracks and dollies. It's all computer, you know, tied to computer movement so they can, you know, move the track, you know, it'll move incrementally to make sure it's a smooth transition as they like swivel the camera around to give everything, you know, the certain amount of depth and light and shadow and stuff to it. But it's like, if any time in that 3 or 4 minute scene, there's like a camera jiggle or a clamp comes a little bit loose, like, you just have to redo your 3 minute shot, which, by the way, is like a month of work.
Yeah. And there are, if you watch closely, there are moments where it shifts just the slightest bit every so often. And you can tell they went, all right, that's within tolerances. We could probably get away with that.
Totally. And I think that's part of the charm of it, too, is that it's not 100% lifelike perfect. You know, it's not like a Toy Story thing where you're like, oh, it really looks like toys come to life. You know, there's something rough in this. But yeah, so really, my opening comments are just like standing ovation for the people doing this amount of work. And to see these things through, the amount of patience and the vision it takes and the passion, all those things, like, it inspires me. It just flat out makes me just feel impressed. Like, I can do anything because any endeavor I have is not that intense. or it's just something I haven't, you know, deemed that I would try to even pursue.
Well, and I have to completely agree with you. Like, there's such a depth of appreciation here for the craft and the passion that it took to do 110,000 frames of stop motion animation. I would have stopped after 1,000 and gone, I can't do this anymore.
Are you a fan of the TV show Parks and Rec?
I love Parks and Rec.
So do you know when Ben does his Requiem for a Tuesday when he's depressed?
Yes.
I thought of that at least 3 different times, and it's one of my favorite scenes, and or that whole episode really is one of my favorite all. And so for those who aren't familiar, it's just a character who, in the midst of a minor depression, he decides to funnel his creative efforts into creating a stop motion claymation movie. And when a friend comes and checks on him, he's like, let me show you the progress so far. And he plays, and it's essentially like one note. And the scene lasts for about maybe 2 seconds. And they just kind of stare at it with this blank look on their face. And he's like, I spent 2 weeks on that. And like, or whatever, like, I know I'm misquoting it, but that's that idea again, that you could probably get really lost. And in fact, I don't have to say probably, especially when I was younger, I was obsessed with making my own little stop animation movies and, you know, with no level of this, you know, nothing built together in this level of beauty by any means, but I would really just have like a little video camera and like create scenes of some toy just, you know, moving on its own, or, you know, a Godzilla eating a Transformer or something, like little scenes where I would spend the entire day just to make some little 5-second janky movement thing, because I just thought that was a lot of fun and cool. So all those things just kind of all coalesce and bring me back to this movie, which I really do. Maybe, you know, maybe not one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time, but definitely way up there in terms of appreciating the art form and what was done and just all that came together to make this happen.
Well, and one thing that people don't really take into account either is the coordination between the animation itself, because you could stop motion animate just about anything, and, you know, not that it's easy, but you're adding a level of difficulty when you're including a musical score to it, one where characters sing, and that so now you're coordinating not just body movements but mouth movements, and yeah, doing it to the beat of a tune. Like, how do you even begin to choreograph this in clay? Like,
well, and that's what's so funny at the time, because when this was being filmed, it took, you know, 3 years for the filming part, not all the planning and storyboarding and creating of sets and puppets and everything, but just the filming took 3 years. And the process, like, just like, there were about 60 different characters that were fully modeled and rendered, and many of those, there were 3 or 4 versions of each of them. But just for like Jack himself, that they had over 200 heads with different expressions, like moldable, shapeable heads. But because they had to have angry, they had to have blank expressions, they had to have sad. And then like the eye holes, you could fill in, you kind of push in these little pop out eyes for when he blinks. Like, it would take like every blink was like 5 frames. You know, or like 1/6 of a second, but they did that all the time to make it just more realistic, because to just have blinks and whatever else is going on. So it's like this amazing level of detail to, you know, have all these different models, all these different takes. And then at the time, computers were not, you know, used, you know, on this level for animation or anything, but they did like scan or take photos of all of the different heads and then just played them quickly like a flip book to the beat of the music when they were, you know, they were just trying to pick, you know, rough outlines of what sure. mouths to use. And so you see some of that behind the scenes too, where it's just a, you know, a big old CRT monitor flickering, you know, but they're showing you how it's like, you're just mouthing in time. And like that gives them this rough idea of which mouths to begin with, but then it's all the fine tuning and sculpting of the mouth as he's singing. And this is all done. Like they wanted to make it feel real. And so you do have these cameras panning in a circular motion while lifting, you know, just like you would in any other, you know, musical where you have these grand shots and it's like, oh God, it's so cool.
It is very cool. I can't say enough good stuff about it.
And like the lighting, like even with that, they were like, we want this to look not like special effects. We want this to look like it was real, except everyone obviously knows it's not real. So all the sets were built at 1/4 size, but when they lit it just like they would a regular movie, but with lights that were 1/4 the size of normal movie lights.
Oh, shit.
Just to get all the same shadows, the same kind of lighting and angles that you would in other cinematic shots.
Fucking incredible. I'm going to try to not make this the entire episode just a praise fest. So I'll ask a different question. Is there anything that you would improve about this movie?
You know, again, we're going to skip past the whole, like, far be it for me to say anything. I'm not the guy with this masterpiece. You know, you're right, because this is our podcast and we say whatever we want. And I do think that there's some pacing things at the times in this movie that feel like just linger a bit. Stuff with Sally and her creator, Captor. I don't know if that scientist has a name, but...
No, I think it's just called the Evil Scientist.
Yeah. Voiced by William Hickey, who's hilarious.
I love William Hickey.
I think we've mentioned him before. And like, I was getting off on a sidetrack.
We've done an episode with William Hickey.
Have we? Yeah, done? I'm sure we have, because...
He was in Christmas Vacation, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that's exactly yeah, right. So. But there's all these, like, Beetlejuice alumni in the... doing
oh,
voices in the
no.
movie too. But so anyway, but to answer your question, some of the stuff, some of the lingering moments, like I know they're setting mood and I know it like, I don't know. I think in terms of the flow of the movie itself, I probably could have made this 87 minute movie in like 60 or 65 minutes.
So if you're utilizing all 87 minutes, what are you improving? What are you changing? What are you, I guess, expounding on? Or because I have a few ideas of things, but I want to get your take first.
I think, you know, there's different possibilities. Like, I would love a little bit more, like with Oogie Boogie, just a bit more of what's going on there. Because he basically has, you know, 1.5 really great scenes.
You know, he's only on screen for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, total. Like, and he's talked about, and like, so there's these little touches and hints, and it's like, but what would I do to really flesh that out? I'm not sure. But I guess for any of these characters, I feel like so many of them are set up in a way where you're like, I bet there's something really interesting going on here. So more dynamics, like maybe a standoff, like a, you know, more confrontation between certain characters who don't really interact, so you can get to see how they relate to each other. I don't know. What would you do? What are these ideas you have?
Well, mine were a little more specific, because we have our A story, which is, you know, Jack discovers Christmasland and wants to bring Christmas to Halloween Town. But you have a B and a C story too, with Sally and her creator, and then Sally and Jack. Like it's a triangle that we don't really get a lot of backstory on any of it, and so you're left to sort of assume a lot of different things, like, you know, how did Sally's creation come about, and why all of a sudden at the end of this movie do Jack and Sally, who haven't said but maybe three words to each other suddenly in love. Like the ending didn't completely make sense to me. And I feel like if we had gotten a little bit more interaction between those two characters, we might've felt a little bit better about it. And same goes for Sally and her creator, like getting more of how she came about would at least allow me to relate to Sally more. Cause like, I love Catherine O'Hara and everything that she does, but in this particular movie, there wasn't really a whole lot for her to do except be there. Like, yeah, she had a purpose, but it didn't seem like she was as important a character at the end of the movie as we were led to believe, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Actually, somehow you've managed to make sense.
Holy shit.
So,
that's once every 100 episodes, everybody. So look forward to it somewhere around, I don't know, 228, 229. I'll make sense again.
We'll see you in 2024. Anyway, another funny coincidence is the last thing I watched before watching this movie. Have you heard of the TV show or Netflix show You?
Y-O-U? I've heard of it. I've not seen it. I don't know any of the plot.
Yeah, I don't either. But it's been talked about and a new season came out and it's all over the place. So I thought, well, I'll take a look. I'll just see what it's about. And this doesn't spoil anything, but pretty early on, you have one of the main characters who is essentially stalking a woman in it, but like in a interesting way. But like, you have him following her to see what her daily routine is like and stuff like that. But what really struck me is that the way that was shot reminded me a little bit of Sally following Jack around in the beginning when he was like, you know, singing and she's like, oh, I know how
she's skulking through the graveyard.
Yeah. And like, she's all like talking to him and identifying with his emotions. And I'm like, this is just what they were just showing the sociopath doing on this other show, which is, it's like, I never thought of her as a sociopathic, you know, stalker. And yet
that's how you just described her.
Yeah. So, hey, we all discover new things every time we watch these sort of things.
Well, that's why we watch them. That's why we do this show, so we can learn new things about our favorites and find out that they're maybe not our favorites anymore and stuff like that. Cool.
Well, yeah, again, with the movie just talking about not just praising it, but trying to dissect it, I think another thing that, I mean, I guess I've always connected to or understood, but really feeling at this time and understanding what was going on, is there that portrayal, I should say, of like melancholy mixed with a yearning for something greater.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know if I could say everyone has this, that's not fair to say, but I know a lot of human beings have had those moments where, whether it's a job or a yearning to do something in a creative field, or maybe it's just some situation in their life that they wish was different or better, or maybe they feel like they're trapped in a tower or something, or whatever the thing is, all those elements of wanting to break free, of wanting to, you know, figure out what's next, what am I missing, what's out there, like that feeling, like I really thought was just portrayed especially well by characters who are so encapsulated and trapped within a world of Halloween, and that's how they see and understand things. So, excuse me. Anyway, what I was saying was, no, but like, I really thought that the way that they, especially, you know, with Jack mainly, but again with Sally, and even moments like with the mayor and like the kids, and like you just see these little glimmers of either they just wish things were different, or they just want to shake things up, they want to change, they want, you know, something. So it's like that's the main theme of a lot what going on in the movie. And then so it's especially interesting to circle back, and the happy ending is not that Jack is now in charge of Christmas.
Well, and there's a certain amount of depth to that too. It goes beyond just what you would think of in a superficial sort of way where, oh, we're going to, like, here's the plot and that's what we're going to do, and Jack's going to take over Christmas. It actually portrayed
growth, like personal growth, getting to see things through the eyes of somebody else and getting perspective. And then there's also the aspect of trying and failing. Like, Jack tried his ass off to recreate Christmas, and look what it got him. Like, he was getting shot at by the military, and he had to go to Santa and say, hey, look, you know, I screwed up. How do I fix this? Santa's like, I got it. Don't worry. But it all comes to a conclusion. But at that conclusion, it's not just let's go back to the status quo of how things were. It's okay, now let's learn from what we've done and make our thing better. And they do. Like, they're figuring out how to improve on Halloween. And it's a good ending. It's a satisfying ending.
Yeah. The fact, again, this wasn't just showcasing artistry and animation and all, but it was like a story where, like you said, we could do a little bit more with Jack and Sally and that quote unquote love story, you know, just to flesh out some connection. I don't know, maybe have a conversation, or, you know, like it's like the opposite of like the Before Sunrise and Before Sunset and Before Midnight movies, where those movies are just dominated by relationships formed around conversations. And this is like just whatever the opposite of that is. That's what is their connection.
And that's probably my chief complaint about the movie is the lack of personal connection. Like, there's all this growth and there's all this, you know, let's band together, and you have that and you see camaraderie there, but it's just no personal connection. I think that that's the troubling part for me. One thing, so obviously a very musical movie, there's lots of singing and dancing and all that other stuff, and the score is beloved by numerous people, I mean all over the world, but also by other artists. Like, I remembered as Jack was singing his you know, What's This, that it's been covered numerous times by bands like Fall Out Boy and stuff like that, and it's crazy to me how one piece of media could just sort of branch out and replicate and sort of inject itself into other aspects of art besides itself.
Yeah, like the soundtrack, I believe it was maybe for the 25th anniversary, it was at some point there, the whole album was covered, and it was a bunch of different artists, like Marilyn Manson, and just there were a number of different people that did their interpretations, but I have to believe none of them had their arms twisted. I bet there were people finding out this was happening,
chomping at the bit, going, yeah, hey, can I be a part of your cool thing? Because it sounds fucking rad.
Well, it's like, I mean, to be honest, like, there aren't a lot of Halloween movies, meaning there are movies that are horror and scary movies. There are movies where something happens around or near Halloween, but people who celebrate Halloween, who love it, who live for the decorations and the scares, like, there's not a lot that celebrates, like, from that inside perspective of just loving it as a holiday event. And this movie does that, and I think connects with so many people. It's like the embodiment of, you know, 100,000 Christmas movies all poured into one Halloween movie. And, you know, and Henry Selick did, you know, on the record, he did say, you know, they're like, so some people say it's a Halloween movie, some people say it's a Christmas movie. What do you say? Is it both? And he goes, no, it's a Halloween movie. And that was it. So it was like, so of course, it's whatever you want it to be, because that's what happens. But the director says it's a Halloween
movie. It's a Halloween movie.
I think it's interesting.
Take that, Bill Randall.
Yeah, exactly, Bill Randall. It's also interesting to me that this, I mean, it's makes perfect sense, but this was born from the mind of Tim Burton. But I think he just had so many different things going on at the time that, like, he circled back. He had this idea to do this and was never got around to, you know, having the time, that years and years of commitment it would take to get everything done. But he had this poem that, you know, eventually turned into song, you know, so just a basic skeletal outline, so to speak. And then he, you know, went back to Disney and said, I have these sketches. I have these ideas. I think this could be great. So they ended up, you know, with, I mean, Tim was a producer on the movie, but with his blessing, they, you know, picked out Henry Selick. Cause as they said, it was like, he was one of the few people in this universe that was like from the same tribe as Tim Burton, who, you know, that they just connected and understood each other and, you know, thought the same way and had the same creative instinct. So it's like, he was clearly the perfect person for this project. And so that's neat. But to see this passion just coming from some sketches and ideas, and as they did all the initial storyboarding and like, oh, how do we coordinate a scene? You know, what's going to look like? What is this song going to translate to? Like, if they didn't have reference work in the middle of these conversations, like Tim would like whip out a napkin and just sketch out, no, this is what it should look like. You know, like, so he was like so hands-on in the creative process of helping to bring it to life, even though, you know, he was more or less hands-off in the actual day-to-day pulling it all together. So I just have to imagine it had to be such an amazing project just for everyone involved, but even for someone like Tim Burton, who this kind of sprang forth from his mind, but then have all these other artists and engineers and writers and all these different people bring together something like this. I mean, I'm sure it's probably true for a lot of different types of projects, but this especially just feels like it must have been quite the celebration when this finally, you know, hit the theaters.
Oh, no doubt. And it, going a step further than that, like, this laid the groundwork for Tim Burton to be able to make The Corpse Bride and Frankenweenie, which canonically all three of these movies exist within the same universe. And I think there's one more even that exists within that universe as well. But to grow that thing from just a couple of sketches and a poem to four films that are interconnected and not necessarily a linear thing. Like, that's a real visionary talent. Like, it's something that very few people could just come up with.
Yeah. And it's, I think there's two, like, there's probably a ton of lesser known small studios, people who've done like short films and independent things. And so I don't mean to say no one's doing
yes,
work like this.
Don't misunderstand. There are a lot of talented people, but to be somebody who makes these films for the mainstream, do so in this way is fortunate. Like, it's immensely fortunate for Tim Burton to have come across a property like this and say, yes, I've created it, and now I'm going to make it into this.
Yeah, now that I think about it, like, I really do tend to gravitate towards a lot of this type of filmmaking, even if they're not always perfect projects. Because, I mean, you have some classic work, like with Aardman Entertainment, you know, Wallace and Gromit.
Wallace and Gromit's great.
It's amazing. The shorts and the live act, you know, the long action movies, and Aardman Entertainment and a couple other movies that I actually enjoy quite a bit. I'm blanking on one that's a pirate.
Chicken
movie.
Run.
Chicken and, Run oh, with Mel Gibson was okay.
Oh, what's the one with the pirate?
I think it's Hugh Grant's in that. But like those are good. But then you also have like Wes Anderson doing, you know, Fantastic Mr. Fox and Isle of Dogs, which is not claymation, but it's stop motion puppetry, you know, and some people really don't like it because it's just kind of jilty and disturbing and they have a hard time adapting to it. But I love them. I love the storytelling. I think they're amazing. And then one other I want to mention. Are you familiar with Laika?
Oh, it sounds familiar, but I can't picture it.
They did Coraline and like Paranorman and Box Trolls and Kubo,
okay,
and the Two Strings and Missing, yes, Link. But the thing about them,
Kubo,
the reason,
is such a good fucking movie.
It really is. All of those have merits. Coraline was maybe the most amazing thing I've ever seen in 3D in the theater.
Don't fucking string me up, but I've never seen Coraline.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, it's not like you like, you know, Neil Gaiman or anything.
I know. I get it.
No.
I'm a bad person because I haven't seen it.
We've established that. It's fine. But
The Pirates Band of Misfits is the movie you were
referring to. That's it. Yeah, and that's actually kind of a fun silly movie that I enjoyed quite a bit. But with Coraline, like, it really was the experience. And I saw Nightmare Before Christmas when it was re-released in 3D in the theaters a little bit.
Oh, I bet that was great.
And it was amazing. I really felt like that I was just, like, high or something, like I was hallucinating, or that it was just, the effect was so surreal. It was amazing. But getting back to Leica, just real quick, I mean, outside of just doing outstanding work, they are churning out these movies every 2 years.
What the are you kidding me?
No, it's amazing. I'm just like, how? And like, they also do really great post-credit scenes, or like, well, not post-credit, but during, like, while the credits are rolling.
Yeah, like mid-credit, like stingers. Yeah,
no, they don't do, no, I mean, like, you know, while the credits are rolling, they shoot, they show you them doing what do you call it, with I have too many stop motion, like, animation, like, terms in my head, speed, where they speed it up, time-lapse, yeah, time-lapse.
Oh, photography, okay, yeah,
with them like filming a scene but like in super fast motion, so they show you essentially a week worth of work in about like 15 seconds, you know, and like you just see them flying around and all these things in it, and it just starts to give you the sense of, in a very physical way, what it is that was happening. And it's like, I love all that stuff. It's so cool.
It is very, very cool. So I have to ask, of the three, which is your favorite movie within that trilogy? Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride, or Frankenweenie?
I mean, 100% Nightmare Before Christmas. I've only seen the other two one time apiece. And I thought each were fine. But I had, like, not a very strong emotional connection. I appreciated them. Thought The Corpse Bride was interesting, and there were certain things I liked. That one I could actually see myself watching again. Frankenweenie, I don't really necessarily care. So yeah,
I felt like Frankenweenie was more for the kids.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, and I like a good kids movie here and there, but this did almost nothing for me. I barely even remember it. But yeah, Nightmare Before Christmas, I probably watch it about once a year, and it's just, I can even have it on the background. I even look at it, like, just listening. I will listen to some of the soundtrack. Like, it just, it brings me a lot of joy. And who doesn't like joy?
Yeah, that's fair. Except for Halloween Town, they don't really like joy all that much.
But I know, they don't get it. You mean Scream?
What is that noise? Why does the baby make that noise?
We'll make it better.
Yeah, we'll make it better. Yeah, I'd probably say the same. I really did like Corpse Bride, though. I thought it was very endearing, and it was a good one to watch. But yeah, I think the original Nightmare Before Christmas is where it's at. What else you got, John?
Well, you know, it's hard to go down our route of asking about favorite performances of actors, or, you know, because it's like, these are vocal performances, and while they were strong, I mean, I do think it's,
I like, cool. A good voice actor, though. Like,
yeah, well,
it can make or break a movie like this.
I think the best thing they did about for this entire movie was when they brought on Danny Elfman. I mean, I could just stop right there. But when they have, you know, Danny Elfman composing songs and things, and he and Henry and Tim are, you know, connecting and going over what they're doing. And I imagine them kicking their feet up at each other's houses and just playing through songs, getting a feel for what's happening. And just realizing that as Danny was going through scraps of paper and composure, you know, like playing out themes and like singing little bits of the songs to model for the future voice actors and singers, that they're just like, no, you have the singing voice for Jack. Like, you have to be him. And as one Bill Randall would tell you, Danny Elfman was lead singer of Oingo Boingo. So, like, he, you know, he has some singing chops. But no, like, so just the fact that they had Chris Sarandon, which, you know, of course we know from Princess Bride because we watched him in that.
We did.
But, like, he does the normal talking acting voice, but all the songs are sung by Danny Elfman. And I think they they blend between the talking and the singing beautifully. Like, I don't think the average person would have a clue that it's a different person performing.
And I didn't at all until I was doing research for this episode, and I go, oh, that's two different people. and I was very surprised by that. But to be in that room when they're writing these songs or taking these notes and just like being able to sing along and the fun that they must have had doing it, like I'm jealous a little bit. Like I would have loved to have been a part of that.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like in the last couple of years, I've gotten into watching movies and documentaries and things with different bands, even if they're not necessarily bands or songwriters that I absolutely love, because I just seeing the songwriting process, watching how they work through things is just so interesting and fascinating, that type of storytelling. Like Foo Fighters had a really great series where they were like basically traveling around the U.S. and writing a song for each city or area they were in based upon what they experienced, and you kind of were with them as they wrote each song. And that was I can't remember the name of it. It was on HBO before. But
oh, you talk about Foo Fighters?
Yeah.
Sonic Highways.
Yes, that's it. Sonic Highways. That's great. But then, like, I'll watch, you know, I watched the multi-part YouTube documentary on Justin Bieber. You know, I'll watch stuff on Taylor Swift. Like, all those things are interesting. And then, like, watching stuff on, like, Hamilton. And just, like, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I don't practically worship Lin-Manuel Miranda, because I do. So, but like to just imagine what it's like to, you know, to have been like one of his friends, you know, someone who's there who he's confiding in and saying, I want to show you what I've got so far. And to be able to, you know, to just hear these rough ideas and then see it blossom and grow and turn into one of the greatest masterpieces of musical theater like ever. So it's like all those things, and then that ties right in with this movie as well, to take just some rough, fun, creepy little ideas that transition between the fun creepiness of Halloween and the bizarre warmth of Christmas, and how they would be confusing, and like just imagining it all out. It's like, what a great path to get to take, you know, on. And it works really well as viewers of the movie to just listen in and feel through the songs that wide range. Like you said, the one thing that's really lacking is building up personal relationships, and there's no real emotional core in terms of music and song in that particular way that highlights that aspect that's supposed to be, you know, a really strong theme of the movie.
Right. Have you seen Saving Mr. Banks?
No.
So it's about the making of Mary Poppins and, yeah, like Walt Disney and anyway, there's scenes in there when they're like trying to write the songs for the movie. And that's what I picture. It's like BJ Novak and these other guys are around a piano and like playing a tune. They go, no, make it in this key. No, play that instead. And then they're adding words to it. And that's what I'm picturing throughout all this. And it's fun. It just seems like a really cool environment to be a part of.
Yeah. And I mean, and I can also enjoy movies where that's a part of what's happening, whether it's fictionalized or it's a fictionalized retelling of a biopic type of situation, whatever it might be. Like, I tend to not trust it, but it can still be fun. Like, I think you and I might have had some minor debates between like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man in terms of,
oh,
like,
yeah,
which is better. But like, regardless, they're both movies.
They're both great in their own right. And
they depict that process on some level where you get to get, even if it's just a retelling, either super imaginatively or modeled after reality, whatever the case may be, to see these moments and to be like, wow, like, I just have no equivalent when it comes to that realm. Just nothing, you know, I've worked on creative projects constantly, but I've not created my magnum opus as of yet, so we shall see.
You've got time.
Yeah.
That's our show, everyone. This was a good one. Thanks for joining us each and every week as we distill another favorite from our past. We have new episodes every Monday, so come and check us out on Apple and Stitcher and Spotify and Google Podcasts and all those different podcast apps. You can head over to tmdpod.com, catch us over there. All of our episodes are up there. And hey, by the way, we haven't asked this in a while, but if you're enjoying the show, maybe
tell a friend or a coworker or a family member, somebody else who's into movies and the movies that we grew up watching, and let them know we got a big old nostalgia bomb over here on the Memory Distillery that you would like to share with them. And we would appreciate it. Get our name out there. Help us out. We love you.
It's funny you bring that up, because I, like, just maybe a week ago, I happened to Google ourselves, because I do that all the time for fun. No, but I was brought over to Apple Podcasts and was just seeing some reviews that I'd never seen before. And it's like, oh, cool, fun. And that reminded me, just like you're saying now, that if you're listening and if you happen to listen through Apple Podcasts and haven't rated us before, if you like rate and write a review, even if it's just like a sentence like cool show or as detailed as you like, that
such
actually
a huge help.
That means a lot. It's really cool. So if you could do that, it's free and it's fun and it helps us out. Go for it. While we're speaking about things that are free and fun, I do have to mention Danny Elfman's not the only talented musician that we're intimately familiar with. We have, of course, Semaphore and their song Destroying the Evidence, which is featured in our podcast. You should check them out because they're pretty awesome, and that would be a good thing for you to do. Also, we're in the middle of Spooktober. Why would I say Spooktober? Just because it's closer to being October. Anyway, please email us at thememorydistillery@gmail.com if you have any comments about what we're working on here. We're going to transition from spooky, scary, spooky-tober, Halloween-centric-type movies, and eventually we'll be hitting Christmas holiday-type movies. So if you've got something we've never done before and you're just going crazy because you just can't figure out why we haven't done this particular movie, you got to let us know so we can, you know, shoot you down formally. I mean, so we can
It
seriously and see if that's something we can fit into our schedule. But yeah, thanks again, everyone, for listening. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram at TMD Pod, whatever, just to get a hold of us wherever we're at. And we'll keep coming at you with new nostalgic movie takes. I'm
Jack the Pumpkin King.
And I'm a Boogie Boogie Man. And this has been the Memory Distillery.
Nice work, Bone Daddy.